This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, February 15th, 2012. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, Becoming Anne Bradstreet. The Folger Shakespeare Library in Washington, D.C. just opened a new exhibit called Shakespeare's Sisters, Voices of English and European Women Writers, 1500 to 1700. The exhibit showcases women writers who were never published or whose work was unjustly neglected. As part of this project, a number of first-rate contemporary poets were commissioned to respond to their literary forebears, and the results have been collected in a chapbook. Over the next few months, we're going to do three podcasts featuring these very interesting pairings: Rita Dove and Linda Pastin on Queen Elizabeth, Heather McHugh on Gaspara Stampa. But we're going to begin today with Yvonne Boland and Anne Bradstreet. Anne Bradstreet came from England to the colony of Massachusetts in 1630 when she was 18 years old. She was a devout Puritan, the daughter and later the wife of governors of Massachusetts, and the mother of eight children. Yet somehow she found time and energy to write very esteemed poetry and became the colony's first published poet. Yvonne Boland is an Irish poet who divides her time between Dublin and Stanford, where she teaches. When I spoke to her recently, I asked her to read two poems, one by Anne Bradstreet and her own poem about Bradstreet. But first, she spoke a little about what we know and don't know about Bradstreet's audience in her day.
We know how Anne Bradstreet lived. We're not quite certain how she wrote. How did she publish these poems? Did they go hand to hand? Were they fireside to fireside? Which I think some of the people most interested in her believe they were. So this was a communal speech and vocabulary she wrote with and for the colony, and in that sense was probably quite a public poet.
Interesting, because the poem you're going to read, called The Author to Her Book, would suggest that she did write a book to be published and sent abroad, and not only among her community, but beyond her community.
Her brother-in-law in 1650 went to England on other business and spoke about his sister-in-law as the 10th muse, published a book there, a chapbook really, much the least compelling of her work. The great poems on the burning of her house, on her husband, many of these things are outside that book, which was posthumously revised. The author to her book is particularly remarkable because it's a sort of ars poetica, which a lot of poets wrote in that century, in terms of high and grand speech and the nature of imagination. This is about comparing her book to a child who's born and who is either disabled or they don't like the looks of or something, and is shunned, therefore, as unfortunately would have been partly the truth in the way children were raised then. And that she combines that with the act of imagination. Very, very unusual, very democratic, very interesting poem.
Yeah, it does seem unusual. But it's the metaphor is that the book is her child, and that's a metaphor that's been around, and she does something quite unusual with it.
Yeah.
Let's hear you give it a read. This is Anne Bradstreet's poem, The Author to Her Book.
Thou ill-formed offspring of my feeble brain, who after birth didst by my side remain, till snatched from thence by friends less wise than true, who thee abroad exposed to public view, made thee in rags halting to the press to trudge, where errors were not lessened, all may judge. At thy return, my blushing was not small, my rambling brat in print should mother call. I cast thee by, as one unfit for light, thy visage was so irksome in my sight. Yet being my own, at length, affection would thy blemishes amend, if so I could. I washed thy face, but more defects I saw, and rubbing off a spot still made a flaw. I stretched thy joints to make thee even feet, yet still thou runst more hobbling than is meet. In better dress to trim thee was my mind, but naught save homespun cloth in the house I find. In this array, amongst vulgars, mayest thou roam. In critics' hands, beware thou dost not come. And take thy way, where yet thou art not known. If for thy father asked, say thou hadst none. And for thy mother, she, alas, is poor, which caused her thus to send thee out of door.
That's the author to her book by Anne Bradstreet. So in the third line, she says, till snatched from thence by friends less wise than true, meaning that they are true friends and they're out to promote her work. What does that line mean?
Yes, that's her brother-in-law. He published the book in England. She makes a reference there to the fact that her friends wanted to make her publicly visible, and she did not feel the product she had brought credit to herself or to the community. In many ways, this is a very key poem about Bradstreet and who she was. Mm. She was possessed of a very strong individual imagination at a time when collective will was the prior value. So what you see here really is a struggle between society and an artist. And it's exceedingly interesting to look at that.
To me, it raises a poem of kind of false modesty in some respect, where her
well, yeah, but she wants to make it plain that she is part of a society. She's part of the normal sort of humdrum generation-raising society of the colony. And that her action is something that disfigures the norm. It doesn't elevate the norm. And rather than it being false modesty, it's this very strong sense that the individual artist was something that came close to violating the collective faith.
It disparages her own work in kind of a winking way. It does so elegantly, so wittily,
yes,
that she's basically showing off her talents while disparaging them at the same time.
I think there's a very interesting line there. If for thy father asked, say thou hadst none. She wrote some very polemical verse in that first book that was published. Not, I think, her strongest work, but polemical, where she feels that women don't get a chance to show their sort of virtues as poets.
So by saying there is no father, she's saying there's no male literary precedence
for what she... There's no canonical inheritance for her.
Mm-hmm. And there is a mother, but just she is poor.
Yeah.
How do you read that?
Oh, and for thy mother, she, alas, is poor, which caused her thus to send thee out of door. She's making herself an allegorical figure of not privilege, not wealth, not anything like that. The author to her book is a conceit, and she is a humble and unimportant member of a society with a child whose appearances violate the norms of the society. It's an extremely interesting poem intellectually, and I think you're quite right. It's a very witty poem, not ironic. Irony is not a big trope in the colony, but it is very witty.
Mm-hmm. Now, what makes this poem particularly American in your mind?
Well, I think the first thing that makes it American is to do with the circumstance she's in. The colony, because it was a found community, they had left behind a great society and come to be together in fellowship, elevates the ordinary life. It's an American democratic gesture, or it can be seen as one. In the beginning, it's actually a community of faith, a fellowship of saints. They absolutely elevate the individual life as an example of the life. There is no division between the sacred and the ordinary there for the colony. It makes them so interesting intellectually. She associates the act of art, which is always thought of in Elizabethan England as an exemption from the ordinary. She fastens it here to the ordinary. That's new. That's very different. And I think it is very American. I mean, there will be times when that comes and goes in American poetry, but it will come back with Dickinson and Whitman. They also will put together communities of faith, ordinary actions, the collective drama with the act of imagination.
Now, your poem is called Becoming Anne Bradstreet, and that's definitely a play on words right there. Is there anything that you want to tell us before you read it?
Well, I quote her at a couple of points, but what it really is a looking back to reading her when I was a young woman. When, to me, as a young Irish woman, it was very curious and very interesting that this woman had left a civilization which I would have been taught in Trinity College was the sort of height and acme of literary splendor, to go and thrive in one which did not seem to give room to the artist. I found that just intriguing from the beginning with her. And so she was a transnational poet to me from very early on in my reading, a little bit less now, perhaps.
Just one point of clarification. Mare Hibernicum is the old name for the Irish Sea.
Yes, it's the name written on maps. Becoming Anne Bradstreet. It happens again as soon as I take down her book and open it. I turn the page. My skies rise higher and hang younger stars. The ship's rail freezes. Mare Hibernicum leads to Anne Bradstreet's coast. A blackbird leaves her pine trees and lands in my spruce trees. I open my door on a Dublin street. Her child, her words, are staring up at me. In better dress to trim thee was my mind, but naught save homespun cloth in the house I find. We say home truths, because her words can be at home anywhere, at the source, at the end, and whenever the book lies open, and I am again an Irish poet, watching an English woman become an American poet.
The title of the poem is a play on words, as I said, Becoming Anne Bradstreet, because in a sense, you, the speaker in the poem, become Anne Bradstreet when you read Anne Bradstreet. And at the end, the last line is become an American poet. And that reflects your story as well, does it not?
Well, I think not, with respect. I think of myself as an Irish poet. I'm a great, great admirer of American poetry. But, you know, there are just signal sort of differences between Irish poetry and American poetry. And while I'm a neighbor and a close and admiring neighbor, I'm not in any sense an American or even an Irish American poet. I'm an Irish poet in America. But American poetry speaks to me in a tremendous amount of ways. And it's democratic. Powerful insistence on what became all the way from Bradstreet to Ginsberg is very important for a little island that had to talk itself out of a big colonial literature. So it's a very important poetry to me.
This is also a poem of communion. This is a poem that suggests that you are in continuing conversation with Anne Bradstreet's poetry.
Absolutely. And there's something about Bradstreet that really moves me to this day and always when I read her. And it's quite difficult to put into words because, you know, she lived in the colony at a very important moment. Her husband became the governor. She raised these children. She's outspoken. But there is, to be honest with you, she's a woman I would love to have met. And I am sure that I would have something to talk about with her, which is not at all true of every single poet you admire when you read them. And that warmth and insistence that the life she lived was no barrier to the poem she wrote is a very inspirational to me.
Yvonne Bullen, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You can read poems by Anne Bradstreet and Yvonne Bullen on our website, poetryfoundation.org. Yvonne Bullen's poem about Bradstreet is in the chapbook Shakespeare Sisters, Women Writers Bridge 5 Centuries, edited by Gigi Bradford and Louisa Newlin, and published in conjunction with the Folger Shakespeare Library's exhibit, Shakespeare Sisters, which is running until May 19th. Let us know what you think of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.